Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program. It's heard weekdays on 19 radio stations with 28 signals all across our great treasure state. Thank you for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe, and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook and on the web at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Please contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com. A lot of talk, a lot of concern. Is there enough truth out there about Social Security and why the system, it seems to us that it's going to be insolvent, and maybe for many, insolvent at a time when they are about to draw, when they need it. And so as we look at Social Security, I think a lot of people are concerned. There's a couple of questions. One is, will the program be dramatically cut to save it? What are those solutions out there, right? And, you know, what were some of the causes where our program now looks to be a bit underwater by 2034? And the real question is, how many of you are concerned that there'll be no Social Security when you get to retirement age? Tough questions. And for answers on Social Security today, we're going to turn to AARP Montana State Director Tim Summers and National AARP Director of Financial Security Chad Mullen. We'll find out more about the causes, the projected deficits, as well as talk about some myths and facts. Today, it's Social Security on Voices of Montana. I loved Tim Summers was in studio here as Cody was doing a little opening here about the fastest hour in radio. He looks up and goes, you know, this goes pretty fast, doesn't it, Tim?
It does.
Yeah. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. Yeah. It's good to be here.
Got Tim Summers in studio. He's the state director for AARP Montana. You do just a ton of work. I mean, I look at some of the things that you guys are engaged in. Social Security is a big one for us right now, but all the stuff, I think that. And one thing that I've learned in kind of covering stuff from AARP is that when you have that that concern that your seniors are being treated fairly, justly, so to speak, that filters on down across the board.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And Tom, you know, in speaking about Social Security, you know, it's your money. You earned it through a lifetime of hard work. And for most people, it's essential in helping cover daily expenses and paying bills when they retire. Yet there are persistent misconceptions about its long-term financial stability and how it works. But first, Tom, I do want to say that August 14th, 2025, Social Security will mark its 90th anniversary.
Yeah, that's remarkable. I mean, that's not a bad thing.
Yeah, it's incredible. Yeah. You know, on that date, FDR signed the Social Security Act into law. It's just amazing that it's hitting that 90th birthday. We're going to have a big celebration on Sunday, August 2nd in Helena. We're going to have the Pure Prairie League. Yep, exactly. 70s, 80s band. And we're sponsoring that, and we're going to have folks come by, stop by our booth, and enjoy an anniversary of the 90th birthday celebration of Social Security.
Yeah, and we'll talk the 90 years. I mean, how has it progressed there? You've brought a guest alongside, actually by phone here, but Chad Mullen joins us, AARP's director of financial security. And good morning, Chad Mullen. How are you doing, sir?
Hey, good morning, Tom. Excited to be here today and talking about my favorite topic. Thanks for having me.
How in the world did Social Security turn, or will it turn 90? How in the world is this program 90 years old?
Yeah, you know, I think that's a great question. I think because it worked. I think the answer is flat out. It's a simple program. You work hard, you pay into it. When you retire, there for you when you need it. And because of that, it has survived 90 years. It is the most popular thing out there program-wise. It doesn't matter where you live or what party you're in. People love it. And because of that, 90 years, never miss a payment. It's going to be around for a long time to come, too.
Well, and a lot of people we lean on it. We depend on it. I think over the years, we've learned maybe not to entirely trust it, and maybe that's the wrong way to put it, but we're not entirely trusting our retirement to the government, so to speak. But this is a big portion of it, Chad. And I guess the first question is, you know, people have is, will it be around? When you look at the projections, you know, they keep kind of lowering it. It's not necessarily going to be insolvent, or maybe that's the right word for it. There's going to be a deficit, though. Give us the 50-foot view, so to speak, of where Social Security is.
Yeah, and Tom, I want to talk that first point about how it goes into retirement for a second. So don't let me come back. Don't let me forget to come back to your actual question.
Okay.
But you are 100% right. Like, Social Security is not shouldn't be the only thing in your retirement. Unfortunately, for many Americans and many Montanans, it is. It is the only source of income they rely on, and we can talk about that. For roughly half of folks, it's the biggest source of income in retirement. But if you go back a long time, folks that worked in a job that had a pension, they had a pension in Social Security. In the 80s into the 90s, we saw a transition from pensions to 401ks and those type of things. The younger generation, mostly in the 401k generation. But what makes Social Security pretty unique when you're thinking about your retirement mix, whatever it might be, is it really is the only source of income in that basket that's inflation adjusted. So, every year we get a cost of living adjustment in Social Security. And though, admittedly, those seem small at time and they maybe don't feel like they're really capturing everything, over time that does compound. So, when you're talking to your financial planner, if you're maybe in your 401k at work and you have a seminar at lunch or something, those folks, they're already building in that Social Security payment into your savings plan and building in that inflation adjustment over time. So that's really important. And I tell everyone right now, we talk a lot about, how much a monthly check is, that, what it's going to be, whether it's going to be there, and we'll get to that in a second. But if you're, I think the average benefit in Montana is a little over $1,800 a month. If you take the statistics, and I know people in Montana are pretty healthy and pretty rugged, so I think they live a little longer than the general population, but let's just say you live 20 years after you retire, that's about $500,000 that you have basically saved for retirement in addition to whatever else you've been able to save yourself. And if you're a kid in your 20s right now, that's probably going to be closer to $1 million or $1 million bucks. So that's a lot of money. Now, is it going to be there for you?
Yeah.
It's absolutely going to be there for you. Yep. And people use that word insolvency a lot. And I don't know about you, but if I heard that, my local furniture store was going insolvent, I would assume bankrupt, right? Like, they're going out of business, they have no more money, can't do anything. That's when I think of insolvent. What we're really talking about here is there's a gap. It bounces around each year a little bit, but it's on average about 20%. So Social Security is going to be able to pay 80% of their benefits for essentially ever if there's no action taken whatsoever. But Congress has to figure out how to fix that little 20% gap. They don't have to fix the whole program. They don't have to fund the whole program. They just have to close that 20% gap. And that, these are numbers that Congress deals with every year on all sorts of things. And, they can do it. So I do want to reiterate to folks out there, it's not going anywhere. It's been here for 90 years. I'm convinced it's going to be here another 90 years for you. When you hear that term insolvent, that doesn't mean it's going away. And I'll tell you, here's a funny story. We have done a survey every 5 years about how people think about Social Security since 1985. And we basically ask the same questions. And so coming into this 90th anniversary, I was looking at some of the past. And in 1985, our members, 50 and over, for the most part, you can join any time, though, Tom, if you're not a member, I'll talk about that later. But 50 and over thought that Social Security wouldn't be there for them.
Wow.
So, 40 years later, those folks are have probably been getting Social Security for 15, 20, 25, 30 years now, maybe in some cases. It was there. They didn't think it was going to be there for them. There for them now. Folks who don't think it's going to be there for them now, it's going to be there for you when you retire.
Chad Mullen again, AARP Director of Financial Security. Tim Summers, State Director, AARP Montana, also in studio. And you wanted to follow up on that.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks, Tom, and appreciate that, Chad. But so if I'm hearing you correctly, Chad, if Congress doesn't take action in the next 8 to 10 years, which, by the way, that's about when I retire, and to protect Social Security, it would be cut 20% on average. That's $4,000 a year. That's a chunk of change. And so, you know, speaking personally, but also for a lot of us in that same boat, you know, Congress needs to act and fix it. They've got 9 years to jump in and fix it. So it's not going to go broke, but it is going to face a shortfall, and we need to fix it.
What are some of those solutions, Chad? We're kind of maybe jumping ahead here to I think we have to kind of look at some of the problems before we address some solutions here. But my mind goes to if we're trying to cover a 20% gap, you know, what is the will in Congress to do that? What are they willing to give up, so to speak? So it's not necessarily, because I think a lot of people feel that we need to take some dramatic action here, and maybe it is dramatic. You know, what is the sense? And we'll get into more specifics about it too. But what is the sense of the cost of fixing that 20% gap?
Yeah, so I think so. You know, answer a couple parts of that question there. Congress does an interesting thing where they always talk in numbers in 10-year terms. So when you hear the cost of something, they're talking about the cost over 10 years. Anytime you hear a number, you have to divide it by 10 to figure out, you know, what it actually costs per year. And I don't know anyone else who does that. We certainly don't talk about how much things are going to cost in a 10-year period, at our home and that sort of thing. But if you look at, and the other thing with Social Security is, because of inflation, the cost of living adjustment, it sort of changes, over time. But if we had to make this change today, it's about a $350 billion or so ballpark, how much money it would cost to close that gap per year, right? So that is not nothing to sneeze at. That is, a significant amount of money. But when we talk in terms of the size of our federal government, the things that we do, it's something that's manageable. Now, Social Security is actually the way it's funded and the way it operates is a fairly straightforward system. Money comes into it mostly in two ways: that payroll tax that we all pay from our first paycheck to our last is the, the majority that funds the program. And so, to bring more money into the system, you'd have to do something with that tax. You could increase that payroll tax a little bit. That's very broad, but it impacts everyone. Social Security also has a thing called the taxable maximum, so after you reach $176,000 this year, and it changes every year as well, you stop paying into the program. You don't get any benefits either, so it's fair in that sense. But you can increase that taxable maximum. That would bring in more funding. The other thing you can do is cut benefits. And one of the things that gets talked about all the time is the age, raising the age. And if you go back all the way back to 1983, they did, which is the last time Congress made any substantial changes to Social Security, they did change the age, but they phased that in to today. We're still increasing still increasing the age slowly, right? So it's been a long, long time since that started, because they knew that was a pretty unpopular thing. And so today, the full retirement age for most folks that are going to be retiring is 67. But you really get your full total, the most you're going to get benefit if you wait till 70. And, a lot of folks folks in my family are hardworking folks. My dad was a truck driver. We had a lot of folks that worked in manufacturing. That's very hard. It's very hard to wait 67 or 70 to get that full Social Security. Just, you know, hard to physically do it. I sit in a chair more than I care to admit. You know, I can do that if I have to. I hate sitting in the chair, but I do it, and I can do it. But, you know, I think about my dad, right? You know, my dad's out there working. If he did something on the weekend and broke his leg, he can't work. He can't drive a semi truck with a broken leg. He can't load things and unload things. And there's millions of people that are in that boat. So, you know, the question is, it's not that there's no magic math. There's nothing really complicated to figure out how to do it, but you know, what are you going to do? Are you going to increase the tax? Are you going to reduce, you know, some benefit? Do you do a little bit of both? And none of those are necessarily that popular. And if you go back to the last time we had to face this as a country, back in 1983, Congress waited until the very last minute. They debated it till the last minute, went into the wee hours of the night, and it wasn't that popular then. And they passed it, and they sort of just, you know, didn't talk about it. But the thing that's more unpopular than anything is not fixing it and letting that cut go into effect. And that's what you won't see Congress doing.
And that's good to hear. I don't know that there's enough courage in Congress at times to really address this question about Social Security. I don't hear it, Chad, on the campaign trail. A lot of things AARP is working on. I mentioned that earlier. Family caregiving, livable communities, retirement planning, Medicare, Medicaid, the long-term care, health care, prescription drug prices, and Social Security, a big one. AARP Montana State Director Tim Summers in studio today as we talk about Social Security. We have Chad Mullen, Director of Financial Security at AARP, and it's aarp.org for more information as we get into it here. Tim, it's good to see you again, and I know
see you, Tom.
You're in town for a big conference that we'll save a few minutes at the end of the show to talk about here, but as we have Chad Mullen alongside, Chad, appreciate your expertise. I'm gonna ask you a question, Tim, and then you can follow up with Chad here. But as we're talking about, you know, the solvency of Social Security, and people having concerns about it, trust in our government has probably waned for a lot of reasons, and I think legitimately so. Trust needs to be earned. Hopefully that gets earned back the right way. What are people telling you?
You know, I had a conversation yesterday with our intern, 20-year-old intern, and she voiced that very concern is, I'm paying into Social Security, but I'll never see a dime of that. And it made me reflect, and I said, you know, I said the same thing when I was about 22, like, I'm not going to see a dime of this. Well, now that I'm getting it closer, much closer, and that I've seen that my dad, my brothers and sisters collecting it, I'm like, Yeah, you're going to get it. And it's our money. And we've earned it. And we're going to get it. And we just have to keep mentioning that and letting folks know. I think one of the biggest things that the people come to me with is the government is raiding Social Security. And, you know, that's not entirely true. Some of the thing, you know, Social Security is primarily funded with workers' and employers' payroll taxes, and has never been part of the federal government's general fund. The federal government does, however, borrow from Social Security and in return issues treasury bonds. The federal government has to pay back money it borrows from Social Security with interest. The government has always paid it back in full, and annual interest payments increase Social Security's assets to the tune of about $66 billion as of 2022. So, yes, they are borrowing from it, but they are not raiding it as a slush fund.
Chad, go into that a little bit more, because, I mean, the government's been borrowing money for a lot of years, and we're $32 trillion in debt. And so there's a lot of people who believe that this fund is being raided by the government. If it's just there, it's not a part of the general fund, but they can borrow in, from it. And do they pay that back every year? Talk about that relationship that the government has with our Social Security money.
Yeah, no, and I'm so glad we're talking about this. Here's the basic gist of it. Social Security currently has about $2.7 trillion in what they call the trust fund. And so, you know, what Congress knew back in 1983 is we're going to sort of have a hump in population. And so the changes they made to the program were designed to build up some reserves to help pay as sort of the baby boomer generation got older and retired. And we sort of had this kind of a little bit of a slump in the workforce following that. Now, with that money, they could have done one of three things, right? They could have done nothing with it, so it didn't get any interest. It just sat there, which would make it 100% safe. But it would sort of like devalue over time. You know, dollar today is not worth the same as it was 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. They could have invested in the stock market a little riskier. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. Depends on when you need to pay those things out. You know, we saw from the Great Recession in the late 2000s, you know, some of the dangers in that. Or, and this is what they decided to do, and the only thing that Social Security can do by law, is they invest them in treasury securities, which is sort of like, it's just like savings bonds, right? I don't know if my grandparents always gave me a $25 savings bond for my birthday when I was a kid. Works the same way like that. So Social Security Administration puts all the money that's in that fund into those trusts, into those bonds, basically. They're very safe. The U.S. has never defaulted on any of those. They grow some interest every year, and it, you know, contributes about 4%. So that's one thing that happens separately. Separately, every year for decades now, Congress and the administration have made spending decisions. As you noted, very often they spend more than they bring in, and so they have to go borrow money from a variety of places. And so one of the places they do it is those treasuries, those savings bonds for Social Security. So the two things, you know, aren't really related. It's not that Congress looks at that pot of money and says, okay, I can go take X amount of money from it. It's separate transactions on that. And, you know, it does benefit the Social Security trust funds. It keeps the money very safe. It helps it grow a little bit over time. It helps protect it against inflation, and it's still there when you need it. And it works, you know, essentially just like those savings bonds that you have. There's the Social Security buys them. There's a maturity date. They redeem them at that maturity date. And so there's that sort of constant flux of that money moving around. And so, you know, there is, I'm glad we're talking about this, because there really is that misconception that maybe the fund's been raided or Congress has to take it out. Now they have to pay it back. Congress separately made decisions to spend more than they brought in, and then they had to go find money from different places separately. Social Security was looking to make very safe investments and protect your hard-earned money, but still grow a little bit of interest, and so they did it in Treasury bonds.
I'm still uneasy about it, Chad. I mean, I really am. I've got less than 30 seconds. And real quickly, are there enough guardrails currently so that Congress doesn't abuse our Social Security fund?
Simple answer, yes.
I'll take that then.
I like that. Simple is good.
But I am going to ask what they are because I'm curious about it. There's a lot to it here. And we'll continue on. So that does answer one myth about the government raiding Social Security funds. They can borrow from it, but they can't spend directly from it as a general fund. It really is the cornerstone of many Americans' financial security for their retirement years. I think we're learning we still have to take care of ourselves, Social Security. And it's an age old age and survivors insurance program. There's also, it's become a kind of a social safety network as well, because there's disability insurance that's aligned with this. Many people are concerned that those in the country illegally are getting Social Security benefits. Those are some of the things that just float out there that make it difficult. Welcome back here to Voices of Montana. Thank you for joining us today. We're having an important discussion and an honest discussion about Social Security. AARP State Director for Montana is Tim Summers. Chad Mullen. Tim's in studio. Chad Mullen is on the phone here, Director of AARP's Financial Financial Security Department at the National Office. And so really appreciate, having a discussion here and talking about these things. And Tim, we kind of left talking about how people understand right now their Social Security and their benefits and the faith they have or may not have, in that regard. Moving forward with it, there are potential solutions out there on the table. The question I have is that how do you approach those? Because politically, it is a they call it political football, right? Mm-hmm. This is one that nobody wants to carry across the finish line, because if you say I'm here and we need to fix Social Security and here are the ways to do it, you're going to have a rough time winning re-election. How do we get over that, Tim?
Yeah, so last time that there were major changes in Social Security, as Chad mentioned, 1983, and it came right down to the wire. It was typical Washington. They kept kicking that ball down the road, but that's why we're out here, and yeah, we've got 9 years to fix this. But that's a really short time in D.C. when you're talking about an issue this large. That's why we keep hammering on this day in, day out. We're always there. Poor Senator Daines sees me when I come to D.C. and he thinks, oh, he's going to talk about Social Security again. Well, that's how you get action. And there are, that, like I said, there is no easy fix. And if we've just got to keep on that drumbeat, and we've got to address it sooner than later. So,
Chad, I want to ask a few questions, and I appreciate that, Tim. I want to ask a few questions here. AARP does a really good job when it comes to Social Security in terms of trying to inform people. There's tip sheets, myths, and questions. There's several articles, AARP.org, Social Security Solvency Options is one of them I've got in front of me here. Chad, I'm going to go down this list here, because one that intrigues me in terms of myths is myth number 4 on this list here. You lose a portion of your benefits permanently if you take benefits and keep working. I looked into that. There's some nuances to that, but explain, if people want to start getting their benefits but also keep working, are they penalized for that?
Sort of. I do like to talk about how normally Social Security is a pretty simple program, but this is one rule that's a little unique, and that is once you hit Social Security age and you decide to go ahead and say 62 or 63 or 64, and you decide to take Social Security, if you make over certain income levels, and it's around mid-30,000s, and it changes updates a little bit over time, Social Security starts to reduce your benefits, but they sort of hold on to them, and after you reach your full retirement age, you start to give them back. And actually, there's Congress has talked about raising those limits over time, so there's a possibility that might happen the next year or two. But it really, the whole idea behind that was to really encourage you to think about when you're actually going to claim Social Security, because for those of out there listening, you can start to claim at age 62. You get what's known as your full benefit at age 67, but at age 70 is when you get the most benefit you're going to get. And if every year that you wait after 62, it's about an 8% increase more that you'll get over your lifetime, which is really important. We're living longer. It's probably your only source of inflation-adjusted income. And so the whole idea behind that rule is to really, for folks that are working full-time, to have their full normal salary, that sort of thing, to not just to sort of say, okay, at 62, I'm just going to start claiming Social Security and get some more money, but rather to really think about when you need to retire, what makes the most sense. And I tell everyone, if you're fortunate enough to either know a financial advisor or to have one through your work or have one on your own, you should always talk to them about all these things. But no, ultimately, you don't lose your money. You get a little bit withheld for a while, and you get it back when you reach your full retirement age.
Thank you. I mean, and I had to look into that because that was something that was confusing to me, as you say. But that is exist, does exist out there. Tim, do you have any more myths that you want to address?
Yeah, one that I run into a lot, and frankly, I had a problem with for years, is members of Congress don't pay into Social Security. Well, actually, they do. A common complaint about Social Security is that members of Congress don't bother fixing it because it doesn't cover them. Well, members of Congress came under the Social Security umbrella in 1984, along with the rest of federal workers, as part of sweeping changes to the program. So that's always good for me to know that, you know, they've got skin in the game.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe not enough, but they've got to jump in and address it. One thing that I'd like to bring up, Tom, is we've got a lot of concern about the Social Security Administration right now. You know, folks are having questions about their retirement, when to retire, et cetera, and they pick up the phone or they get online and they've got legitimate questions. On average, they're waiting 2 hours to talk to a real person. And if that ever does happen, you know, it's rushed, etc. That's one area that I think we can address now that Congress really can jump on. They can provide full funding to that Social Security Administration to improve their customer service.
You know, Chad, I'm going to throw this to you with the caveat that as I've worked through some of these, you know, with my mom, things that slow the office up, they're not just dealing with Social Security. They're dealing with disability payments. They're dealing with survivor payments. I mean, has Social Security taken on too much?
No, I wouldn't say they've taken on too much. And historically, you know, they've had to deal with all these things. And historically, they've had to deal with them, you know, in a much more manual way than they do now, right? You know, now most of our wage information, our tax returns, all those sorts of things are sort of all automated in systems that work with the Social Security Administration. You know, it's what we've seen is just a little bit of lack of attention over probably the past decade or so into really, you know, driving those metrics that make sure that people can get the benefits that they've earned. I think Social Security is a really, really unique program. You know, you start your first job at McDonald's in high school, and that very first paycheck, you come home and you say, what the heck is a FICA tax? And, what, you know, why did they take $7? And that probably tells you how much I made when I started my first job. And the, you know, and you pay it all the way into when you retire. So our position has been the Social Security Administration and Congress should focus on making sure that customers, if they want to go into an office, if they want to pick up a phone, if they want to do something online, they should have a very timely, accurate, and easy experience. And, you know, we have seen last couple of years, a lot of focus by Congress on that and ensuring that those systems work smoothly and easily. And, you know, we've got a lot of work to do, but we're making some progress as well.
Let me ask finally here, too. We'll let you go, and then Tim will wrap up with a final comment here or so. DOGE, they've made some pretty bold claims about fraud. They say they have the receipts, and I could throw some numbers out there. Doge is claiming high numbers. Opponents of Doge would say that's not going to really. How much fraud is taking place in our Social Security system, and will a cleanup effort have a significant impact?
So I think it's important to talk a little bit about, because sort of some different terms get thrown around: overpayments, fraud, various things. So one thing, the Social Security Administration has a very low overpayment, which this means paying people more than they were supposed to get. They have an extremely low rate, sub 1%. However, within that, it's more important to note, is there fraud? Yes, there's fraud, you know, in anything, but it's extremely minor, and it's not what you hear about sometimes in the news. The bigger issue, and where you actually see, you know, some effort that needs to be paid attention to, and you have seen it now, I think Social Security Administration is doing a better job working on this, is overpayment. And this is where you're receiving a Social Security benefit, and oftentimes, through no fault of your own, you got a few more dollars than you're supposed to get. And months or years down the road, Social Security Administration figures out that they've overpaid you a little bit, and now they need to collect all that money back. That is an administrative error on the Social Security Administration's part. Almost in every case, it wasn't a fault of your own. And that's where having good systems, well-trained people, that's where actually using technology to make sure that the Social Security Administration is checking wage records against your Social Security records and that sort of thing can really make a big difference and, make sure that funding's not going out the door. And that all gets lumped into the bucket of fraud sometimes, but there's a big difference between Social Security Administration making mistakes and someone, purposely going out and trying to deceive the organization.
So you don't suppose that reducing fraud is going to have a major impact in the solvency? It'll have some impact, I presume. Oh. Yeah.
Yeah, on solvency, it would be the numbers that that we're talking about would have maybe a couple of days of solvency. It certainly wouldn't be months or years. When you have 190 million people paying in the program, when you have right now just right around 69 million people receiving retirement benefits, those are sort of mind-boggling numbers compared to the fraud.
Well, it's still something that has to be weeded out too. It's just like anything. Chad, I appreciate that. I appreciate some answers about Social Security. We'll keep talking about it because it's. I think that's how we move the ball forward, especially in a very tough political field, so to speak. So I appreciate that. I'm going to let you go. I'm going to have Tim wrap it up here. He's frightened about that because you provided a lot of good answers for us, Chad. I appreciate that. Go ahead. Yeah, sir.
No, thank you so much. I enjoy talking with you today.
Yeah, it was good, and we need this. And so I will drive people to AARP.org and just click on Social Security. You'll find a lot of questions and answers for you as well. Chad, good stuff. You be well, okay? Have a great summer.
Thank you, sir.
Just a few minutes in studio, Tim Summers, State Director, AARP Montana. They're in Billings here as part of this National Convention of Extension Agents. I mean, there's 1,400 of them lined up. So John Hawley, who's with MSU Extension, Communications Director there as well, it's got a great show lined up for us tomorrow, Tim. I know you're going to be roaming around the area as well, but we're going to be talking with National Extension agents, and we'll get a flavor of all across the country of some of the challenges that they have there as well.
Oh, yeah, and Extension is such an amazing program. They cover everything from 4-H to home canning to caregiving and long-term care stuff. Yeah. And what we finally figured out is that Extension has the expertise, AARP has large membership numbers, and a membership who really, really needs that information. And so it's a perfect fit, and that's why we're here.
Looking forward to
that
tomorrow.
Really appreciate it.
And thank you for coming in today, too.
Thank you,
answering
Tom.
Some questions on Slack.
Always fun.
Thanks for joining us for the podcast, and join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.